The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network on.
Now, my next guest first started writing at the age of just 6 when she crafted her own set of poems and then illustrated her own book cover to go along with them. Since then, Jane Mitchell's love for writing has never diminished, and she's gone on to write many books for young readers and is a multiple award winner. She joins me now to talk about her new book, which is called Run for Your Life. Jane, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Now, this is a book aimed at young adults, but I read it and found it was a page turner. I kept going and going and going. How much do you want to tell us now about the principal characters? Because there are two narratives which go on in parallel. One is in the past in another country, and the other is in the present in this country.
That's right. So the main character is 14-year-old Azari, and she arrives in Ireland from her country in South Asia, and she's looking for international protection, and she's accompanied by her mother, and they both have had to flee their home country because of violence and because of intolerable circumstances that prevented her fulfilling her own dreams, I suppose, and her own whatever she wants to do in life. And she's come to Ireland looking for international protection, and she ends up with her mother in a direct provision centre in Ireland. And to give the story some backstory and some sense about what happens to Azari and what brought her to Ireland, there's the second dual narrative of what went on in her home country and what forced her to leave.
You don't identify the specific country, although it could be one of many countries based on what occurred to her family there.
I don't identify any country because I didn't want the story to be focusing on the culture from which Azari came. So it's not a story about her home country and what happened, although that's essential to the backstory. The main story is about Azari's experience with her mother in Ireland, living in a direct provision centre, and what she has to go through and what so many people looking for international protection experience when they arrive in Ireland and look for protection.
Now, the country in question, it's in South Asia. It's an amalgam really of many cultures, isn't it, where these kind of events could take place. It could, there are parts of Africa where the same kind of events that befell your fictional family, it could have happened in parts of Africa, but you've said South Asia.
Yeah, children in a lot of developing countries are denied their rights, so they don't have access, particularly girls, so they don't necessarily have access to education, they don't have access to partaking in sports, and their lives are very limited and dictated really by very patriarchal customs. So that could happen in a range of countries, but I didn't want to focus on any one. It could be Asia or it could be Africa. In this case, it's a country in South Asia.
What is interesting about all of this is that, you know, we see an influx of refugees from Ukraine at the moment, and we know they are refugees. Their country is war-torn, their homes have been bombed, and they are fleeing, and they arrive here, and they're given the right to work immediately, even though they're not in the EU. The complexity that you've added to your story is that the family arriving, the mother and daughter, are not what you call classic refugees in the sense they are not running from a war.
They're not running from a war, you're right, but they are seeking international protection because they've had to flee for safety, for their own lives. And I think that's what undermines or underlines any person looking for international protection, that they are forced to flee their home country in fear of their lives. And that fear could come from a war, such as the people in Ukraine, but it could also come from domestic violence, from the person's sexual orientation, from the colour of their skin, from their religion. There's a whole range of reasons that people have no choice but to leave their country and seek safety elsewhere.
And we go back and forward as we read through the book to, you know, another chapter in what happened back then, and then back to the present time and how life is developing in the direct provision. But it starts before direct provision, when these people arrive, and it's very early on in the book, so it's not a spoiler. I mean, they are found and they're dehydrated and starving and cold.
They're on a ship. They're found on a container ship, hiding among the huge boxes of deliveries and the containers. And they're brought out by the staff, and they're not even sure where they are. So they know it's a cold country compared to their home. They know it's a country that is populated by predominantly people with white skin. They know that people are trying to, you know, that they try to hear people's language and they realize they're speaking English, but they actually don't know where they are. And that is part of the whole confusion that an awful lot of refugees arriving in Ireland feel. They don't know where they are. They don't know what's ahead of them. And there's fear and there are differences between their home countries.
And the observation, you know, they're finding it very cold. And if this is their autumn, what's their winter going to be like?
That's right. That's right. Because the weather is so different. It's a typical Irish summer's day where there's wind and
rain. It doesn't actually get much worse. That's the truth of it.
I know. Yeah, right,
compared
right.
to where they might be from. Now, in trying to characterize Azari, I mean, how you're not from South Asia, you're not a teenager. So how did you capture what she would be thinking and feeling?
I come from a teaching background and I've always been interested in child development and children's education and children's rights. So I would have interacted with children a long time over years in the classroom and in different environments. And I enjoy interacting with children and chatting with them. So I suppose putting myself into Azari's mind frame and how she must feel, I think the confusion she feels would be universal to any of us. And her as a young teenager, she's coming from a very different background. So I'm very conscious that yes, I'm not a refugee. I have never gone through a refugee experience, and I'm not from South Asia. But I wanted to try and shine a light on what the experience of young people coming from these countries is like. And I hope in time, young people going through the direct provision service will be able to tell their own stories and will be able to talk about their personal experiences. But in the meantime, I wanted to just explain a little bit of what typically might happen.
Now, direct provision, we were promised it would end. The way it works here is different to the way it might work in other countries where people much earlier would get the right to work, to actually fend for themselves. There's no particular centre that you have in mind, but you have drawn on a number of threads that I would have seen over the years and months in the news headlines about various things that have happened.
The centres that Azari and her mother go through are fictional centres, but they're based on what would have been in media and would have been reported in the media over the last number of years. I mean, we've been living with direct provision now for in excess of 20 years. It was originally introduced as an emergency accommodation and service for people arriving in, but it's been with us for 20 years and there has been an awful lot of media and publicity about what has happened and the complaints and the dissatisfaction, both within communities and within the centres themselves. And I've drawn on a lot of those for the experience of the direct provision centres that Azari and her mum are living in.
Now, at the end of the book, because this will be possibly read in book clubs in schools, in the classroom, you have the key issues isolated for potential debate by the young adults who'll be reading them. One is the length of time. These are the facts that you give for to inform the discussions. The average length of stay in direct provision is 24 months, some residents having spent up to 10 to 12 years. In these accommodations.
10 to 12 years. And if you're a child and you arrive in a direct provision centre as a child and you're there for a number of years, that's half of your lifetime. I mean, if you're arriving at 4 or 5 years of age and you're there for 10 years, you're a young adult when you leave and you've never had the experience of living in a home environment, living with your family and cooking around the table, you know, or in the kitchen and eating shared meals around a table together. That's not part of their childhood and that's not right. And it's a long time to be in such a centre.
One of the reasons, I suppose, that we have such convoluted processes is that there, I think at the beginning, was probably the suspicion that some people were chancing their arm, that they were economic migrants and not refugees. Do you distinguish between those two categories of people?
Absolutely. They're entirely different. So an economic migrant is somebody who comes by choice and chooses to come somewhere else to better their own lives. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's lots of us who have sought to travel to try and seek a better improvement in terms of our education opportunities and our job and our income. But a refugee is somebody who has no choice because they are fleeing in danger of their lives.
But do you think we should treat those people differently? I mean, in the case of your heroic family, the mother and daughter who arrive, one of the issues is always about papers, identification, even trying to stand up the true story that they tell. You know, how can you prove that this happened to you? How can you prove that you truly are a refugee or someone needing the help of the rest of the world rather than someone who's simply looking to better themselves.
And that is a huge challenge for the authorities in trying to distinguish who needs support. So we're all very clear that the people coming from Ukraine are traumatized, very distressed, and coming from a war-torn region. But if you have somebody like Azari who arrives with a personal story of fleeing and grief and distress and trauma, it's very difficult to establish the truths around that. And we need to have some way of distinguishing between the two, because people who need international protection are entitled to it and deserve it. Whereas people who are economic migrants, they're also entitled to come and travel and see if they can better their lives. We'd all do that. But they are different than the refugee category. And I think there has to be some way of distinguishing between the two.
But when you say they're entitled to come, do you believe that we should have visa requirements? I mean, just a few minutes ago, we were talking about hospitality and the need for more people from outside the EU to get visas to literally people the hospitality sector with workers. I mean, do you believe that all comers should be allowed to come to this green island of ours, irrespective of visa requirements?
I think there should be a visa system. I think there should be some way of controlling who comes in, but we are crying out for employees at the moment. And I heard in your previous article that, you know, it's so difficult to get employees at the moment and to get somebody in. And we need more people arriving on our shores. We need more people to do the jobs for us and to improve our own economy. It's going to be beneficial for Ireland as well. So I think, yes, we should have people that are welcomed in.
Now, this doesn't intersect in your book, although it does in real life, with the housing crisis. So you shut down direct provision centres, and the question is, where do people go? Because there are some people who are entitled to leave direct provision, are there not, who stay there because they simply cannot afford, with the job they get, to get private rented accommodation.
Once again, their choices are limited. They're trying to get out of direct provision. They might have been granted refugee status and entitlement to stay in Ireland, but then they have nowhere to go because we have a housing crisis. And that is just a dilemma that we're facing. And we see it again with the Ukrainian refugees. Where are we housing them? And we're trying to avail of every opportunity we can to put people in safe accommodation. But it is a huge challenge facing our country.
Now, one of the issues, again, it's not a spoiler, it's kind of predictable, that the ugly head of racism, be it adult or teenage racism, raises its head. Is that, do you know, a major issue in people living in direct provision?
It's always going to be an issue for people coming from other countries. I think the schools are doing a wonderful job in encouraging integration and ensuring that new children are welcome, regardless of what country they're from. And we have children now growing up who are now second generation, having come from a different country than Ireland, and are a second generation in Ireland. And I think that's wonderful. I think diversity in a population is always to be encouraged. It's always great to see different people from different cultures. They bring such a richness to Ireland. We have such a strong tradition, and it's always good to see other traditions coming in and other cultures and sharing with us. But racism is always going to be an issue, and we have to use every opportunity to tackle that.
It's funny, you know, the old mantra would have been in the bad old days of high unemployment, they're taking our jobs. Well, sorry, there are jobs there that are unfilled.
We need people
to
come in.
So you can't
jobs.
Shout that at someone anymore.
No, absolutely
who's
not.
Walking down the street doing a job, you're taking our job. Well, sunshine, that job is there for you if you want it. Go get it, would be the reply. Have you had feedback yet from your younger readers?
I've had some feedback from some young readers. I've done, as part of the book, I've done a number of workshops in direct provision centres with the Irish Refugee Council and with Fighting Words, and I've met with young people who are living in direct provision.
And what do they think of the description of their lives?
It's actually interesting, because when I talk to them, there are a lot of similarities. So they talk about not even getting a post delivered to them personally, that there's a collection box that they have to come down. Everything is by their room number. They come down and do that. There's nowhere for you to actually go in and meet young people and have a chat to them. It has to be all prearranged by appointment. You can't drop in and have a chat to them. They
yeah.
can't participate.
But you can understand that. There are child protection issues. Where you
absolutely.
Can't have any stranger rocking up and wanting to chat to immigrants.
Absolutely. No, there has to be protection. But at the same time, if you had your own home, you could choose to invite people in, and they're not in a position to do that as readily as they would be able to if they were in their own home. And having young people engage with me and talk about their own stories is very, very powerful. I had some very courageous young people participating in a workshop who talked a lot about their own experiences and the barriers they faced when they arrived in Ireland. And that was fascinating.
One of the issues is kind of the cross-cultural thing that Azari begins to assimilate in terms of the way young Irish teenagers would live, and the other generation, her mother's generation, and we won't tell how she copes with that, but clearly there is a conflict, and there would be a conflict between older generations who have the traditions of the country from which they've fled, and then the younger kids who are just immersed in the Western way of life.
I think young people are very, very, they're able to accommodate change. They're able to adapt much more readily. I think Azari's mother has never known anything different, and she finds it much harder to get used to a new culture, a new environment, a new way of living. Whereas Azari meets young people, she's beginning to integrate with them and communicate better with them, and she finds it easier to adapt and to become more Irish as time goes on.
Well, it's a very good read, and for me it was a very quick read indeed, a gripping read. It's published by Little Island. It's called Run For Your Life, and Jane Mitchell, its author, thank you very much for joining us in studio today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network,
weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.